Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Fred Obiero.
Hello, and welcome to the Ivy Podcast. My guest today is Martin Schilling. He's the former COO at the N26 Group, and he's currently working on a book. Thanks for joining us, Martin.
Thanks, Fred, for having me. Really a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. So give us a brief introduction about yourself and your role, and maybe a little bit on what excited you the most about becoming an entrepreneur and also about writing the book.
Yeah, sure. Look, I have been an entrepreneur all my life. So what excited me most is walking paths that no one walked before. Yeah, essentially venture into the unknown with a great team and build amazing companies, which no one has done before. That's kind of my path since early days. I have created a youth parliament in my small Bavarian hometown. I went to Argentina, creating a foundation there. I then created my first company in Berlin, a strategy consultancy. Worked a couple of years for McKinsey, super interesting years, where as well I helped McKinsey clients to create companies in the Middle East, in Saudi Arabia. I worked 2 years, and then I helped McKinsey found a subsidiary in Germany. Yeah, and I was then at a point in my career where I had said to myself, I never wanted to work for banks or insurances. And at that point in time, the N26 founder, Max and Valentin, called me and said, look, don't you want to scale up N26, a fintech, a European fintech, from around 300 people to 1,500, which was an amazing journey.
There's something that you said that I want to follow up on. Actually, two things. First one, you said that you helped found the parliament when you were growing up.
Yeah, exactly. It was, you know, it was a youth parliament. So it was essentially the idea. I lived in a small Bavarian town, and there was the idea of our mayor to, you know, create a youth parliament. So it was essentially a city parliament for youths. Yeah, that was the idea.
Is that something that you did while you were also, you know, at a younger age, or just because of your experience?
You know, I'm driven since these days as well by, let's say, societal mission. This has always been important for me, and more important than earning money. So, for example, when I now, you've said it before, I'm currently writing a book, and I'm super passionate about creating companies, in particular tech companies, that will create millions of future jobs and secure technological sovereignty of countries. Yeah, so that was always a theme in my life, that, you know, earning money and kind of creating valuable companies for investors is great and important, but the purpose to essentially make the planet a better place has always been a big thing for me.
And I also was going to ask, what made you go from Germany to Argentina? What was it that had you cross, you know, the Atlantic to get all the way over there? You know, is there something that you had applied for? Did they just find you? How did you end up in Argentina?
Yeah, you know, I was dancing tango Argentina in that days a lot. So I was indeed a passionate hobby tango dancer. And I thought to myself, you know, I want to experience this on world-class level, and Argentina is the one place to go.
Wonderful. Yeah. So, Martin, you and I have spoken briefly about the book that you're currently working on. Could you please tell us more about it? And, you know, the book is titled The Builder's Guide to the Tech Galaxy. So that's a very unique name, first of all. Tell us a little bit how you came up with the idea of writing a book, and, you know, what the readers will take away from having read the book.
Yeah, of course. So look, essentially, this is the book which I would love to have read before joining N26. Yeah, so essentially, it's a book for scale-up builders, because we have the phenomenon, in particular outside the US, I would say, that in, you know, less mature ecosystems, startup ecosystems, you have many people who have not yet scaled up companies before. So we're rewriting this book for aspiring and current leaders of startups with the ambition to make their companies big. And the idea is we want to shorten learning cycles. Yeah, if you read the book, that's the idea. You can avoid some of the errors we made in scaling companies, and we want to shorten the learning curves, you know, from, let's say, 3 quarters to 1 quarter.
What are some of the errors that you think a lot of startups make when you know, when they bring in new people and trying to scale up? What are those, you know, common mistakes that you've seen make companies fail, and how have you helped companies navigate that so that they end up being successful?
Yeah, exactly. You know, these are the four building blocks, these four pitfalls you're referring to, which we're talking in the book. So essentially, the first is having a super clear North Star, a direction. Can I elaborate on that in a minute? So that's one. Two, bringing in an AAA team. That's the two thing. The second thing. Third, building functional excellence in your scale-up functions. With functions, we refer to product management, for example, technology, operations, marketing, sales, that typical scale-up functions. And finally, getting enough growth capital. I think these are the big four building blocks for operational scale. That's very important. We are writing here not about business model or business model innovation. That's another topic as well, very relevant. The focus of the book is organizational scaling.
So let's talk about the North Star that you just mentioned, one of the four things that you mentioned. What do you mean by the North Star, and how can it help the readers in becoming successful in their profession?
Yeah, so, you know, many companies, many startup companies are very fast and good in creating a business ambition. You know, they have been asked usually about this many times. So creating a business ambition is easy, but there are around the business ambition, five more important dimension of direction, which a scale-up needs to have in place. The more the better, the more direction you have, the easier, the more autonomy you can give to your teams. So, and these elements of direction are, first, purpose beyond profit. Yeah, so how does your company, or why does your company make the planet a better place? That's the first. Second, company values. So what are the guiding principles of your company? Then third, business ambition, what I just mentioned. So what's the business outcome in the long run? Fourth, North Star metric. What's the one metric which really counts in your startup? And then finally, the company value proposition. What is the unmet need you address to which target group? Yeah, these are the five key elements. And then you need to bundle this into annual or quarterly OKRs.
Okay, so OKRs, objectives and key results, right?
Objectives and key results, exactly. Essentially, this is how you translate this North Star, the direction, into actionable items for your teams.
Are these things that filter down to everyone that's working on the startup, or are they more broadly applied on the executive level and the founder level?
Yeah, so the principle of OKRs is usually that you scale, you want to cascade it down in the organization. So there is an objective and key result on a company level, then there is some objective and key results maybe on your, you know, director's level, and then for the team level. That's the theory. Most important is to have it on a company level so that the executive team is extremely clear on the top 3 to 4 key results to focus on each quarter, and has as well a, you know, 1 year perspective on that. That already makes a big difference for the North Star.
Right. When you were breaking down the North Star, you mentioned metrics. Give me an example of a metric that you can look at. Are these internal metrics that are internal within the startup, or are they external metrics? Like, yeah, how do you compare with the competitors? What kind of metrics do you look at?
So, you know, Airbnb does this super well in kind of defining a North Star. So this, we can quickly walk it through. So they say their purpose beyond profit is create a world where everyone can belong. Yeah, it's beyond profit. It's kind of this belonging is at the core of their purpose. Then they have some company values, be a host, so kind of embrace the adventure, something like this. And then you're referring to metrics. Then they have the first metric is business ambition. Give 100 million people an opportunity to earn income. Yeah, that's kind of an external metric to their hosts. And the number of guests per night, that's their North Star metric. So then that's one of the key indicators they're focusing on, optimizing, increasing the number of guests per night. And then they have their value proposition, something like, you know, we enable travelers to benefit from a truly local experience and hosts to benefit from extra income.
Got it. So the metric basically covers both internal and external metrics. Absolutely. That they're tracking to make sure they're sticking within their North Star principle, right?
Absolutely. And you know, that's the nice in the OKR framework, that's very flexible. So you usually have internal and external metrics, they shift over time, but it's important, that's the North Star idea, you should have one very stable metric. So for example, at N26, we are using monthly active users. So it's not, for example, signups. It's the monthly active user who really use the account.
All right. That's a good segue. So you previously worked as a COO at the N26 group, located in Berlin, Germany. How does the North Star principle apply to those that are leading larger organizations? Do you have any examples that you can share?
So certainly, and you know, what I just said applies there as well. So many startups and scale-ups I worked with are very clear in the business ambition, which is good. But many are not so clear, in particular around purpose and around value proposition. And why is that the case? Because you are so under pressure in a scale-up and in a startup with operational work, in particular the leaders, that you often do not find or do not take enough time to sharpen the North Star. So this is why I believe it's super critical that at least every quarter, you know, you have some kind of letter from the executive team to the company, or, you know, a two-pager where you refine your North Star. That's usually not done enough. And the clearer you are there, the easier you get growth capital and the easier you attract talent.
So when you redefine the North Star, is that based on, let's say, customer feedback, changes in the industry? What would make you want to redefine the North Star on a quarterly basis?
It's a good question, Fred. That's now a bit art, not science. So there is certainly an element of founder vision in it. So you need to, you know, have some inspiration. You need to look at certainly industry trends. You need to look at what your customers want. So there's no one size fits all answer to this. The key is you need to have multiple sources where you constantly refine it. And in particular, taking the time to really do it.
Great. So you also talked about functional excellence, building high performance scale up functions. What are some of the qualities that help when it comes to building high performing teams?
So, you know, the first thing one needs to understand when it comes to functional excellence in scale ups is you need to enable a journey of specialization. So your early pirate ship team, they are the generalists. The intelligent generalists, you can throw them essentially in any water and they will swim. At one point, in particular, when the company gets to around 100 FTE and, you know, Series B is a typical turning point, you need to hire experts, someone who has seen scale-ups before. Yeah, for it could be a marketing expert, you know, even deeper, a performance marketing expert. It could be, you know, a platform engineer, you know, people who have seen it before. So you need to enable this journey of specialization. Now, what's the problem? The problem is you have then rising silos because the complexity within these functions, marketing, operations, product, et cetera, this is increasing day by day. And it's only naturally that your team starts focusing inward. Yeah, so they're building a great function, but they look inside their own silo because they have to a certain degree. That's why as the leaders of the company, they need to install several principles to bridge these silos. And a couple of these principles are customer centricity. You really need customer centricity at the heart of your company. So for example, having one metric around customer centricity sitting alongside profit and growth. That's one of these principles. Or learn it all beats know it all. You need to really make sure that it's a learning journey, that all the teams engage in a learning journey. Or then autonomy to act to empower cross-functional teams to work together towards joint objectives. So the principle is essentially you have rising silos and you need to bridge the silos.
Follow up to that. You talked about AAA teams, hiring AAA teams. How do you go about, first of all, what are AAA teams and how do you go about acquiring that level of talent?
Yeah. AAA talent is for me a team which has the potential to accompany you to a unicorn level. Yeah. So essentially people, they don't have to be experts, but they need to have the right mindset and kind of the general abilities to really go with you the full arc. And the bar cannot be high enough. This is really important. There is often the error made, and I made it myself. You don't have a lot of time, you're under pressure, you lower the recruiting bar and you get people in where you say, let's see if this works. It is almost always better to delay the hiring until you have a really outstanding candidate. Yeah, that's kind of the first mindset. And to get this AAA talent, that's super critical. You need to understand that the company applies to the AAA talents, not the AAA talent to you. Yeah, and that means you shouldn't take no for a no. It might be that you need to follow up with a AAA candidate half a year, giving him or her every month a call, sending, you know, some podcasts or, you know, some white papers to really communicate that this person is the one you need. You might need, you know, someone might move from Silicon Valley to Berlin and you need to take care of his or her partner to find a job in Berlin. Yeah, you know, you really need to walk the extra mile to get this AAA talent.
That's fascinating. And it's one thing that there's a book that I read about having the right talent. And an example that was listed in that book was Amazon, Jeff Bezos. He doesn't fill a position until he feels like he has the right candidate for that position, because a metric that he found is if you make the wrong hiring decision, you'll spend 80% of your time managing that wrong decision. And he'd rather leave a position, you know, unfilled until he has the right candidate to fill it. So that kind of relates to what you just explained on that previous example that you gave. And I'm seeing how you're drawing the parallels to a bigger company like Amazon, even though this, you know, we're applying this to a startup kind of setup for scaling up.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the point is it's much easier said than done, because you are feeling the pressure and the pain of non-hiring. You know, and to sustain this pressure and pain in that moment, to really keep searching for great candidates, that's kind of not totally trivial, but absolutely essential to do. Yeah.
So as you spending, let's say, months or up to a year trying to fill this position, what do you do in the interim to make sure that that unfilled position, that role is being fulfilled? Do you just have somebody else assume part of that responsibility? Does it just become a shared responsibility among multiple people? How do you go about filling that gap in the interim?
Yeah, good question. You know, you need to think about talent like in a portfolio. So it's essentially similar to investment. You need to think in portfolios and investing in several people and several assets. So ideally you bring yourself to a position that you're not dependent on one person leading. That means you need to overhire a bit. You need to proactively hire, already start hiring, or maybe you don't already need the person 6 months ago. Six months in the future. So this, to bring yourself in the position that you can afford to wait 1 to 2 months or three, that's kind of really, really key. And you know, you're often surprised how capable the existing team is. If there is a gap, you have this philosophy of hiring AAA talent, the younger AAA talent steps in. So, you know, there are several aspects as well of not filling a position that can be beneficial.
Good. My next question is about, you know, how startups can grow. What are some of the best strategies on how to go about acquiring growth capital?
Yeah, so when we talk now about growth capital, we usually mean series B and follow-ups. So that means $20 million checks and above. So it's more the bigger checks. That's what we refer to when we talk about growth capital. And in the growth capital stage, the fundraising game is a bit different. So whereas in Series A and the early phases, story and team really counts, in the growth rounds, the business model and the performance to date are much, much more relevant. So what's key is there are six questions a growth investor usually has on his or her mind, and you should be aware of that. First is fund fit. So do you at all with your company fit to the investor's fund? There it's helpful to very early ask the investors what numbers they want, or what's the check size they're looking for, and what's the rough valuation. That's one. Two, timing. Why now? Why should the investor now invest in your startup or scale up? So essentially, are there any technology or capital trends, regulation trends that facilitate growth? That's two. Three, market potential. Is your serviceable available market greater than $1 billion. It's the serviceable, not the total addressable market. Yeah? So the percentage of the total addressable market should be bigger than $1 billion globally. Then fourth category leadership, a very important question to many growth investors. Have you invented a category or are you going to lead a category? It's very important. Then obviously the business model. So does the company's performance to date show a path to become profitable in the midterm? And there they usually look on figures like net revenue retention or something like customer lifetime value over average customer acquisition costs. And finally, the team. And a great growth team is a team with clarity of thought. So here again, it connects to the North Star, being very clear on what you want to achieve. Crystal clear will help you attract growth capital.
The next question is something that I get asked a lot, and I'm curious to see your take on it. What are some of the ideas that you can share on how smaller startups whose members lack experience of previously working on a startup can raise funds? You know, how do they go about that?
Yeah, look, there are a couple of principles I would apply. So first, impossible is nothing. The impossible is nothing mindset. Yeah. So really aim high. So have a global ambition. So for example, you know, it's not about providing, as an example, better recipes for cooking aficionados in the US. No, it's a global platform to bring together global food stars and their fans. You know, it's really think big. That's the one thing which really makes the first difference. The second, plan with 100 no's. It's really, really important. A great entrepreneur is persistent in the face of rejection. Yeah, and every of these no's need to make you stronger. If someone tells you, no, I don't think this is a good idea, it's often not you or your idea, it's maybe the other side who didn't get it. You need to be flexible to change your idea and adopt it, of course, but every no should make you stronger. Yeah, that's second. And then finally, it's about, as we said before, you know, it's a learn it all beats know it all journey. It's you are engaging on a learning journey, and very early on you will face failure. You will, you know, your hypothesis won't fit totally, and to quickly go into this learning cycles. That means, you know, maybe starting with service for customers, talking to 100 potential customers to really start getting into this learning cycles. That's as well for investors very, very, very inspiring to see.
I think my favorite phrase so far on this episode is every no should make you stronger. I'm saying that because that doesn't only apply to startups. It should apply to everything in life, right?
Exactly.
And I like that mindset.
Absolutely.
What's the one tip you can share with our readers on how they can apply some of the recommendations that you've described in your book?
You know, it connects what you just said very much. I think this is being an entrepreneur is having the right mindset. And for me, it has always been a combination of this impossible is nothing, dream big, and almost a Socratic modesty to embrace failure and learning cycles. There's a super cool story. You know, there was a guy in 1525, he was called Nuno Garcia de Toreno, and he painted the so-called Salviati world map. And this was a map of the known territory these days, but he left the unknown spaces blank. So he invited with this exploration. You know, it was common these days to paint dragons and, you know, mystical creatures in the unknown spaces. No, he left the map blank and he invited this exploration. So I think this is really a call for all contemporary entrepreneurs to venture into the unknown and to explore the open spaces and build great tech companies.
And going back to your book, what do you hope that the readers take away from having read the book? No. And also, when will the book be available for purchase?
So first, it will be available in the next month. So we are currently in negotiation with a couple of publishers. We haven't signed a contract yet, so it will take a little bit, but it will be very soon. And what I...
By next month, you mean May 2021, right?
It will certainly not before the summer of 2021.
Got it.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, you know, the one thing which I would love that... the readers take away is that the best time to create and scale startups is now. And I want readers to leave golden cages of the corporate world, if they are there, and venture with us into the startup world and build many, many great startups and scale-ups. So that's kind of the spirit of the book. We want to encourage entrepreneurs, potential entrepreneurs, to start building.
Wonderful, wonderful suggestion. There's also one thing that I like asking all the guests that come on my episodes, because people have different experiences as they ascend in their professional careers. What has helped you get to where you are? And what of advice would you give to someone that wants to pursue a career that's identical to yours?
So my advice would be, look for a good school to learn early or mid in your career. Better early than later. My school was McKinsey. I worked for McKinsey. And combine this with own entrepreneurial endeavors. Yeah, so this combination is very powerful. It doesn't have to be a consultancy. It can be as well a big tech company or really a great scale up, but it should be an environment where you learn from excellent people. Yeah, so you need a school, but then you need as well autonomy and courage to try out your own ventures. And if you combine this, you're perfectly set to become a successful entrepreneur.
Martin, thanks a lot for coming on and talking to us. I can't wait to get a copy of your book so I can read some of those principles and apply them to my own self.
But no, thanks. Fred, thanks a lot for having me. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Ivy Podcast. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.